Okay, we're back and talking this hour with our friend and colleague of many, many years, one of America's true heroes, a citizen scientist. But beyond that, he's a man who cares about all of us and our planet and has been researching, of course, chemtrails, aerosol spraying operations for years, but has turned his attention to the mystery and the dire threat of Morgellons. He has issued a paper, which I have posted at Rents.com. Just look under his name in the guests section at the top. It is Clifford Carnicom, of course, and the paper is entitled The Extent of the Problem. Morgellons. Where are we? Morgellons, The Extent of the Problem. June 16th, the year 2010. That'll be tomorrow, Wednesday. We're going to jump off and take a look at things as they are now. Welcome back to the program, Clifford. Let's just get right to it.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Thanks for the opportunity to be here again.
Of course.
You've always been very dedicated and committed to providing a platform.
Well, I'm honored
to get the information out, and I certainly appreciate it.
Sure. Honored to have you on. Thank you, sir.
Tonight, I think, what prompted this, I think, is a paper that I put up a couple of days ago that's been brewing, I think, for a couple of weeks, and then we have a couple of years of history behind that. And I think what's a little bit different about what we're trying to cover tonight is that we know that my work, certainly to the best of my ability, has a focus on what I would call an objective portrayal of the facts and evidence and information that has come to light over the years regarding both the aerosol operations as well as the advent of this so-called Morgellons condition. But generally, my job is one of presenting evidence and factual information. And that remains the case. But, I think the objective I have tonight is to attempt to portray the importance of the emotional and the human side of these issues as they have also developed. And, maybe that's not my forte in terms of communicating the information, or at least making a case and persuading people, because I'm sure that there are people that are more effective at that level than I may be. But nevertheless, there comes a time when we have to be willing to confront the very human aspect of what it is that is being shown and discovered here. And that's what prompted this paper. We will have a certain amount of factual information available to us again to talk about tonight. And we will go over that information. But what motivated me in writing this paper was that at some point, you can discuss factual evidence all that you want. We have 12 years now of continuous litany and presentation of factual information for all of us. And maybe the article also expresses, that internal frustration that I have, and I suspect many others share, with the problem of, studying and examining and evaluating and considering information and evidence versus the reality that the work appears to demonstrate at this point, that all of us are involved in this situation, essentially all of us, the best that can be told at this time.
Let me translate that, if I might, Clifford. Clifford is suggesting here is that virtually everyone now is afflicted, contaminated, or otherwise involved with Morgellons syndrome, whatever it is.
Whether we like it or not is the issue. And,
right.
you know, people can make their own judgment. I can only go by the information available to me, but certainly I have some background in the field of statistics, that's for sure. And with the chronology that we can describe tonight, there is no question from a statistical point of view that the entire population is subject to risk and consideration here. I don't think that's any kind of stretch of imagination or information at all to make that statement. Statistically, it is completely out of bounds. The consistency that has been demonstrated in certain studies here. Now, this being said, as the sort of the motivation and the basis for this paper, what we will do, and I outline in this paper, you know, we will go through the additional facts, you know, the additional information that comes to light. But the end point of the article is to try to force the reader to truly answer a series of questions that are placed at the forefront of that paper. And we can come back to those questions at the end, mm-hmm. but, you know, I'll basically oblige us at this point by saying, all right, you know, what's the additional factual information? Why should I believe you? Why should I think that I might be a part of something that has been relegated essentially as a tangential condition within the population? And so here we go. In terms of why would I say that I think you, that means everyone, you need to ask whether or not you think you're involved or not. Now, the general history that precedes this article, on this particular topic at least, is that over the past couple of years, I would say, I think that I've been working on the Morgellons name in itself is problematic, but it's a name that's been given for now, so we have to consider it. But I think I probably have been working on this issue for about the past 4 to 5 years, would be my guess. And over the past couple of years, I have run a certain physical test on those that wish to participate. I am not a medical doctor. I am not offering any type of medical diagnosis, opinion, or advice to anyone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that caveat is distributed through just about every paper that you see from me in mm-hmm. a very emphatic sense. So this is not about me providing some type of diagnosis, assessment, or recommendation to people as to what they have or what they should be doing. It is about the objective presentation of independent research that I consider myself free to conduct, and I shall continue to conduct it. And it is my right to conduct that research. And regardless of the results or consequences of that research, I will make it public as long as I am able to. And thus, for the last couple of years, there's a situation where at least a couple dozen, I would say, roughly 2 to 3 dozen people have participated in a certain physical testing process involving filament samples and involving the blood. And I'll summarize the results of that testing. But basically, I've presented these results. And, you know, statistically, if you're just assuming you're going to involve people at random, you certainly would not expect the level of repetitiveness and consistency that I have found in these tests. But the specific procedure or process is this, and it's quite simple. And I'm not the person that discovered this. There's a Dr. Gwen Scott, a naturopath, that came across this several years ago, and that particular discovery process is also outlined in a separate paper, and my credit is given to her for making this particular test available to us.
Right.
There are obviously many questions that need to be answered about this particular procedure and in terms of why it has such an effect. In other words, the chemistry and and metabolism of what's going on here. But nevertheless, the test is quite simple and involves the use of red wine. And we know in the so-called Morgellons condition that a, quote, symptom that has been described is the appearance of unusual filaments within the skin.
Right.
This is certainly a dominant theme within that condition.
Filaments, fibers, whatever you want to call them, they're there, and they're elsewhere as well. I'm back in just a minute with Clifford Carnicom as we continue. Do click on Clifford's name and visit his website. It is a repository of brilliant science and facts. It's an amazing location on the internet. And we will continue in just a few. Conversation with Clifford about his new paper up at Rentz.com, Morgellons, the extent of the problem. And the extent, briefly, ladies and gentlemen, is kind of like we all may have it. Go ahead, Clifford.
Thanks, Jeff. And you know, I've made this position known before. If you look at my papers, you will see me making this position, roughly a year and a half ago.
Yep.
What's different about, this case tonight is that what happens is I will make the information known. I will make my assessment as best I can, and I will let that sit, basically. I will give the public, and that's basically any citizen in the entire world, the opportunity to digest and assimilate that information and also refute that information if it can be done or needs to be done. But basically, make that open fodder for all of us to cross-examine and see whether or not it's true or not.
Now, Clifford, excuse me. I can hear people saying, well, wait a minute now. Hold on. I don't have any fibers in my skin. I've looked. I've got no filaments, no colored filaments, fiber, nothing. So how does he think everyone has it?
So there is a specific procedure that is outlined on this paper, and it's very quite simple, but it uses red wine, and involves, what I recommend right now to conduct this particular procedure is to take a swig of red wine, and not after swallowing anything. Make sure your mouth is as clean as possible. Whatever you think makes it spick and span before this test, go ahead and do that, and then take the swig of red wine, and then swish it around very vigorously around in your teeth and your gums and your mouth for roughly 3 minutes is what I'm doing. And I'm not saying there might not be variations. This is just a particular method that appears to be, repeatable. But do that for about 3 minutes and release those materials, spit those materials into some kind of dish container, preferably glass or something that you can see has contrast where you can see. And collect that material and then do it again. I do it three times, 3 minutes apiece, roughly, and collect all of that material and then siphon off most of the liquid with an eyedropper or something like that. And then look at the material that remains in that dish, if it does. And if it does not exist at all, then please make that known. But even if it does not appear visually, there actually will have to be a microscopic examination of that solution to make any kind of determination that it doesn't exist. But we have a photograph, for those that are willing to look at this on the paper that we're speaking about. I have other photographs, but the one I'm showing you on this paper we're speaking of tonight, called The Extent of the Problem, is quite representative of the issue. And that's the very first photograph on this paper, in the upper left. Now, one often sees, let's say, or frequently sees, and we can actually say in all cases, it has been seen to some degree. This is the only thing that has been a variable thus far is the amount of material, no matter what individual has participated. But sometimes it's quite evident and sometimes quite shocking to the subject in terms of the sheer amount of physical material that is produced. Now, this material is a filament of a filament nature. There is something that needs to be cleared up here, and that is that there are certain parties that will state that this is all perfectly normal. And the claim is made that red wine and saliva will produce a precipitate, and that's all you're seeing here, and everything is fine. As a matter of fact, there is a well-known doctor apparently involved in this research. I won't mention his name at this point, but you know, I'm told that he was presented with this information, and he apparently would not conduct the test, is the best that I know, but used those claims on the Internet that said this is all perfectly normal because of this supposed reaction that's taking place.
Without conducting the test.
Yes, and this is what bothers me, of
course.
Doesn't
sound too scientific.
Right, and that's my understanding. That's secondhand information, so if I'm ever mistaken, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
The point is the test has to be conducted in order to make the determination. Now, that reaction that we're speaking of with red wine and saliva, that is a true verifiable reaction. It does take place. I have studied that reaction in detail. And red wine and saliva does indeed produce a precipitate. And I have examined that precipitate under the microscope. The crucial distinction here is that this material that I'm talking about is not a precipitate. A precipitate is essentially a solid. This is a filament. If you were to study this material in detail under the microscope at sufficient magnification, this material is a filament. It is not a precipitate. And that particular reaction that's being described, although it occurs, is not relevant to the information and material that is the subject of our discussion tonight. And anyone can conduct this test for themselves to determine whether or not they believe this is relevant to their own condition. And again, like I said, thus far, everyone that has participated has certainly produce this result, and it's just a matter of degree. So an essential piece of information here is that the character of this material is filament in nature, and furthermore, the properties and characteristics of that filament material is identical to any level that you and I wish to talk about tonight, is identical to the skin filaments that have been described as being representative of this condition. So what we are saying here, what I am saying, mm-hmm. is that the testing thus far on what I would call a representative sample of participating individuals is demonstrating the existence of this most unusual filament nature material, which we can talk about in great detail. We have in the past to some degree.
Yes.
Is exhibiting this material within the body, and that some individuals are manifesting this filament material at the skin level.
Got it.
But that criteria is not sufficient to establish the existence or absence of the condition.
All right. Understand. We'll be right back. Hold on, Clifford.
Sure.
I got that clearly, and everyone else did too. So please stand by. We'll be back in just a couple. Okay, back with Clifford Chronicum, talking about Morgellons, the extent thereof, and it is apparently extraordinary. Go ahead, Clifford, please.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. You know, I had there's an individual that recently characterized me. He called me a reluctant messenger, and you know, I have to agree with him in the sense that the information that I am presenting, and in many cases have presented over the years. You know, this is not something that I want to say. It's not a matter of wanting attention or wanting something. It's simply an alert. It's a call to attention. It is saying, this is here, okay? Over and over and over. And for whatever reason, you know, if I'm a person in that role, I have to assume it. But it's not something I desire, and I am not an alarmist by nature. What I speak of is repeatable, documentable, and each of us can decide whether or not this is true or false, and I encourage you to do so. The second distinct and repeatable characteristic that has been identified over and over and over, I would say in direct association with this same condition that we're speaking of, is an alteration of the blood. And it's an alteration that I don't think anyone under the sun would call to look healthy. And it would appear at this stage that the degree, you know, this is a generalization, we'll have to see whether it holds true or not, but the generalization is that it appears as though the degree to which the blood is altered appears to correspond roughly in degree to the severity of manifestation of filaments within the body or on the skin.
All right.
Okay, this is the way it appears at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some representative pictures on this site, on this page that we're talking about tonight. Now, to get to the specifics of this particular case and why this paper was written, we have this body of 2 to 3 dozen people over the years that have participated that show these two things that I've just talked about. And we could go into great detail about the blood, but basically the cellular integrity of that red blood cell is damaged severely. There's no question about that. The cell wall is broken down. And furthermore, the structures, the very specific physical structures that are breaking it down, are identical, again, to any level at all that I can establish on my end. They are identical to the very same structures that are found within these filaments. And this is why I am presenting a level of correspondence between the alteration of the blood and the particular characteristics of these filaments. There is a particular bacterial-like structure in both of these alterations and unique manifestations that I'm speaking of, and that's where the overlap comes from.
Right.
Now, we have this body of this 2 or 3 dozen people, and we have a certain set of repeatable events with these two distinctions.
Mm-hmm.
What occurred recently was that I had two individuals that were available to me, and they indicated some degree of interest in the research. Now, these two individuals had, to me, two unique qualities about them. One of them was a vegetarian, and not only that, this was a lifelong vegetarian, but rather unusual, because this individual, roughly at 3 or 4 years old, became a vegetarian through upbringing, and then carried on that lifestyle through adulthood. And so you have a case of a 37-year-old male vegetarian and a vegetarian for life, which is a little bit of an unusual circumstance, I think. And in addition, this individual, to the best of their ability, believes there are no health issues of any kind, known certainly, and that everything seems to be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time expressed an interest in the research. This particular vegetarian does eat dairy products, so it's primarily meat that is abstained from.
Well, it's a lacto-ovo vegetarian, probably.
Yes, I guess there's particular classes from what I can gather on vegetarians, but that's the case here. And that was of interest to me because, you know, I have a certain representative body of information that already encompasses a wide range. And the truth is, there'll be a juvenile involved, a child involved in that earlier work.
Mm-hmm.
Goes through people that are well into their 60s, male and female. And samples come from certainly broad distribution across the United States, and one of the samples comes from China. So we basically have what I would call at least a reasonably representative sample size at this point, at least distribution.
Have you come across anyone, Clifford, who manifests a negative profile?
Not exactly. Like I say, it's thus far it's only been a matter of degree. But the reason this part of the reason that this vegetarian interested me because one of the individuals that has participated, and remember, I'm not in the testing business. I don't run a clinic here, and I'm not testing people. You know, these are people that just have volunteered under certain conditions that have been accessible. But
sure.
One of the individuals, in fact, it prompted a whole study that hasn't even really been written up or described. But one of the individuals has a macrobiotic history, also lifelong or very, very long term, let's say, of following a macrobiotic diet. And that prompted a study, basically, of a group of people. And it's an isolated case, but all I can say thus far is that one individual who rather religiously or sincerely follows that regimen of a macrobiotic diet came out, let's call it, with the least effect thus far of these two conditions or alterations that I'm speaking of, but not eliminated, okay? It was present, just not to the degree. And like I say, for the work I would do, I would need to see that sample at a microscopic level, even if it was claimed to be visually clear, and then I would have to look at the blood. But certainly it was diminished within that particular individual. But by the same token, part of the reason for that study was that there were other people that were following a macrobiotic diet, and I was testing those individuals also, and I can say that those individuals certainly did not come out clear of this test by any means. It may be a matter of how sincerely that particular discipline has been followed and for how long. I don't know.
Okay, I understand.
So,
all right.
So what happened here is we now have a 37-year-old vegetarian male, lifelong, and at the same time, there was a 8-year-old child, male child, available. That also indicated an interest. And with the child's permission, along with the 37-year-old male, these tests were conducted, these samples were observed under the microscope and or visibly, and that's what this paper is about.
Okay, and stand by right there if you would, Clifford. We have to pause and we'll come back and pick it right up there after this. Okay, let's get back to Clifford Carnicom and his paper, which is up at Rentz.com, and his own website, of course, Carnicom.com, for everyone to see and pass around. And Clifford loves to hear input from intelligent people who give this thought. He's always open-minded and, again, doesn't really feel comfortable where his research is leading him. Go ahead.
Thanks very much, Jeff. The results of these particular observations or samples, whatever we wish to call them, show that within the 37-year-old lifelong vegetarian male and the 8-year-old male child, that the exact same alterations and unusual manifestations of both filament as well as blood degradation at a rather severe level, I would say, both of these occur with both of these individuals in exactly the same way that has been described for the other 2 to 3 dozen individuals over the last 3 to 4 years. And, you know, and I want to thank these particular individuals for making this available to us. But in the same way that the extremely low-frequency work was done, you know, I would do the work. I'd say, this is what I find. I'd let it sit, and then I would usually come back to it some period later, sometimes years, but often months later. And I would repeat the test again and see what happens. And that ELF work, extremely low frequency work, stands for itself also as a very serious issue that also has never been addressed, that shows over a period of many years the presence of this ambient ELF radiation that's never been adequately explained to me, that has no natural explanation that I can certainly see.
Right.
And we used to talk about that years ago, and that's another issue, you know, that we can come back to. But, you know, it lapsed for many, many months, and there were two variations on this interesting variation that sort of piqued my interest as, okay, what if we do this again? What happens? And we do it, and what do we see? The same darn thing, okay? And now you have an 8-year-old child, all right? And, you know, I try not to be emotional in my presentation of my work, but I'm sorry. You know, if you see an 8-year-old kid that shows the same thing at the same level of seriousness, and I'm supposed to just go on?
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And if you look at my work, you'll see 2 years ago I brought it up 2 years ago. There's a paper called And Now Our Children. It's over 2.5 years ago, where the first opportunity for a child to involve themselves in this in an objective way occurred, and I wrote that paper. And I made the statement. But it's like, at what point does it hit you? What are you going to do? Are you just going to study forever? Are you just going to, and you have to excuse me, Jeff, because you got me going a little bit. But
that's okay. You know, I'm right with you.
Are you just going to study forever? Are you going to accept what you see forever? And that is the point of this paper, is to ask everyone those questions. At what point are you going to realize that you and your children, and actually thus far in the other testing that's been done, other life beyond human, at what point are you going to recognize that you're involved? And I don't know how I can be more direct in making known the seriousness of these questions.
Right.
Then I have, and then I am. And I don't know what the answer is going to be, and I know people are frustrated, but, you know, frustration isn't good enough.
No.
It's not adequate to address the problem.
Right.
And we know that ultimately the only thing that addresses the problem is action, ultimately. And whatever level of that action takes, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that it needs to occur. And it's not acceptable to me, and I've been very patient. I'm very patient in terms of saying, this is what's happening. This is my concern. This is what I think you should be looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And I will keep doing that. But I will tell you, it is not acceptable to me, the level of response in this world thus far.
Oh, how many times has the CDC or Kaiser Permanente contacted you?
We know of none at this point.
That's right.
And I don't claim to be a representative for the entire state of affairs.
Makes no difference.
But I do claim to be an individual that offers what I would regard as honest and sincere research.
You bet.
Affecting this issue.
Absolutely. Extremely important.
And we all have that right of hearing, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the avenues available to me, but having the option or freedom to speak is not the same as a response to a need. And we are beyond that point of response to a need. Now, to sort of follow this through on
about four minutes on
a line of reasoning that lets us know, at least I think, mm-hmm. that there is reason for us to act and for us to conduct research and to do things.
About 4 minutes, Clifford.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that I don't see this as a situation that we are as human beings and other life forms on this planet are to be a subject of for all eternity. I do not believe that. I believe that we must make our stand in terms of what we know is right. And we must confront that which we know is wrong. And at the end of this paper, you will see at least a, call it a line of optimism, that this is not necessarily to be the state of affairs. And you will see some examples of an individual that has followed certain strategies related to alkalinity of the body and the use of antioxidants at a little bit higher level, I suppose, than any kind of minimum daily requirement type thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you will see the certain testing that has been done on that individual with respect to the blood. And you can ask yourself whether or not you think there's any noticeable change there is. But there is. Okay, there is improvement in the integrity and uniformity and geometry of those red blood cells. This particular individual has exhibited the same degree of degradation and deterioration of the blood as is shown immediately above in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is there appears to be some prospects by which this situation can at least be addressed at an initial level that are worthy of research, and those strategies are outlined on the site. And we won't go into detail other right now other than say that it focuses on the alkaline and acid state of the body,
right,
and the role of antioxidants. So, you know, it's not a dismal end to the future of the human race if we would simply recognize our place and our power and our need to confront that which we know is wrong. And this is wrong. It is wrong that it, first of all, that something has occurred on such what appears to be a essentially global scale, and it is wrong that once it has been called to attention, that it is not being addressed in any type of serious manner, and that there is no proper response on behalf of the citizenry of the planet. This is what's wrong.
Wow, what a presentation. Let me ask you in our last minute and a half to look ahead, look down the road. Where is this going, Clifford?
I think that people are going to need to understand and recognize that it's in the ball's in their court. This is what I think. That shift will have to take place, where individuals recognize their power individually and collectively to do what they know is right. And I don't know whether it's going to take, you know, 2 years or 100 years. I don't know, but I know that this is what has to take place for this to change. And I'm not saying that process is known or understood what it's going to be, but it's the only way that something of this magnitude and distribution and scale is going to be addressed. It's been uncomfortable for me many times in my life, but if I know something is wrong, I have to confront it. And eventually, we all need to confront it, wherever that leads us.
And it may not lead to a very pleasant place.
It's whatever it is. It's whatever it is. But we know what is there now is not a pleasant place.
Right. I agree.
Well, so we better do what's right, because you already know it's wrong.
That sums it up perfectly. All right, let me remind all of you to look under Clifford's name, please, at rents.com and see the Carnicom Institute. And click on that and take a look around, and you might want to support some of the amazing work that this gentleman is doing for all of us. And just remember his work about aerosol spraying, and he's putting himself 110%, as he always does, into Morgellons now. Well, Clifford, again, thank you very much for more amazing research. And I wish I could be more optimistic, but I'm like you. I'm not doing the research, but I'm not happy where I see this whole thing going, from my perspective, which, granted, is much more limited than yours.
Yeah, I understand, Jeff, but, you know, you're here the same as I have been for the last dozen years, and you're doing what you know you can, the same as I am, as we know a lot of other people are and want to.
Yeah.
So, you know, personally, I believe in the human spirit. I do.
Thank you. Thank you, my friend. Take care. I'll look forward to our next conversation. I'm here whenever you need it.
Thanks a lot, Jeff, for everything, always.
Okay, good night.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Clifford Carnicom, the extent of Morgellons, and do visit the Carnicom Institute. All right, that's our program tonight, back in 21 hours. And thank you so much for the kind emails coming in about the birthday. We appreciate that. Talk to you soon.